Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. It is a pleasure to see you all here this morning. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, I am happy to see you here today. I have a few announcements as always. I wanted to give you a heads up about the coming weeks, in particular next week, October 6th. Here at Thursday Morning Roundtable, David Mankiewicz will be talking about the new Metropolitan Business Plan and Export Initiative that's being undertaken with the Brookings Institution, so I know you'll want to be here for that. You'll have some good questions and some good input for David, I'm sure. Later next Thursday at noon at IRP, the Institute for Retired People, you might want to take advantage of an opportunity to hear from Christina Reale, the new Commissioner of Aviation at Hancock Airport. IRP, I have flyers, or you can find it on the University College website. But again, that's next Thursday at noon at IRP. Later in the month, we will be talking with Sharon Contreras, the new Superintendent of Schools for the City School District. We will be hosting E.J. McMahon of the Manhattan Institute. Some of you who have been around for a while may remember E.J. was here several years ago with Frank Morrow talking about the governor's budget. This time he'll be talking about hit on a public pension, so I know that's of great interest. And then rounding out the month, our very own Pam Hyland of the Central New York Penn Path Girl Scout, and also Greg Tripoli of OHA, talking about Girl Scouting, the 100th anniversary. And although this isn't quite that old, I was going to wear this, but it was just a little bit too small. But what did you think about? What do you think about all those bags? My very own. So I will, you know, lend this to you for your historic exhibit there. But you know that will be very entertaining. I will be very interested to hear how many of our local leaders were involved in Girl Scouts, because, well, certainly we know a lot of our local leaders were girls at one time these days, so that's a good thing. Men can be Girl Scouts too. You are right. Not so many of them, but you're probably right. Speaking of that, I also wanted to remind you that in just about 2 weeks, October 14th, is the deadline for voter registration. I don't think we're going to have a real nail biter of a county executive race this year, but you should still you still need to, if you've just moved into the county, or don't forget if you've moved within the county, you know, in a different election district, and they might have moved around. Also, the Board of Elections has moved. They're out on Erie Boulevard West, 1000 Erie Boulevard West now. But anyway, so you've got 2 weeks to do that. Don't forget. I think that's it, except that it is my pleasure to introduce today's introducer, Onondaga Citizens League board member, Elizabeth Daly, who is executive director of your Onondaga County Public Library. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Good morning, everyone. I'm pleased that Sandy asked me to introduce the county executive, Joni Mahoney. Joni's commitment to literacy, to conserving resources, to effective collaborations resonates with me personally and as director of the library. Her love of literacy and reading has made her a longtime library supporter, which I really appreciate. Born and raised in Syracuse, Joni's roots are here. She graduated from Corcoran High School, the Syracuse University School of Management, and Syracuse University College of Law. After spending time in private practice, she accepted a position with the Onondaga County District Attorney's Office and served 5 years as a criminal prosecutor. In 1999, Joni won an at-large seat on the Syracuse Common Council, and in 2007, she successfully ran for the office of county executive and is currently running for a second term. Since being elected, she has explored and effectively implemented cost-reducing measures. She has found ways to share services with other municipalities. She has undertaken technological improvements to increase effectiveness. She's a strong advocate for the city of Syracuse, our urban center, and is a voice for county governments on state and national level. I know you'll find her presentation on the 2012 county budget very thoughtful and informative, and you might just want to listen for one little special part. She's going to mention her vision for a restructured central library. And this would be a central library that has flexibility to meet 21st century needs and visibility to be a key element in the revitalization of downtown Syracuse. So it's my great pleasure to introduce County Executive Joanne.
Good morning. I was at an event in Albany earlier this week, and the person who was starting the comments said good morning, and they got a very quiet good morning, and she said, I'm Baptist, and I want a nice, rousing response. So she tried again, but you're off the hook because I'm Catholic. We don't talk in church. So that good morning was, you far exceeded my expectations. I am happy to be back here. I come every year at this time of year, and I really appreciate this opportunity because I like to explain the budget, and right now we're in the middle of the budget process. I gave my budget to the Onondaga County Legislature on September 14th, and they have been conducting committee meetings and listening to all of the department heads and trying to get the detail, and there will be a public hearing on the budget October 6th at 7 o'clock in the legislature chambers, and then there'll be a final vote of the legislature the following week. So we're right in the thick of things right now, and I'd like the chance to tell you what's there. I'll give you a real high-level view, touch on some of the specifics, and then I know that sometimes I don't leave enough time for questions at the end, so I'll try to do that better. I actually brought something to tell me what time it is. So the levy in my budget, which you all know, the levy is the entire amount of property taxes that we collect in Onondaga County for county government. The levy is $154 million, and we're going to keep it right at $154 million. We're not increasing the amount of property tax that we collect in the county under my budget, and I don't expect that we will under the one that I get back from the county legislature. And just as an aside, assessed values on people's homes have gone up about 1%, but we're keeping the levy flat, so the rate will come down a little, and it'll be $5.77 a thousand as your full value assessment. So your county property taxes, if you're in a $100,000 house, should be $577. And it's different in different towns and villages because of the way they value. But your rate, your county rate, is the same no matter where you live. This is still being affected. As I said, it's different in different towns and villages. The rates are different because it's still being affected by the sales tax sharing formula that we changed. And I'll give you a quick refresher. Onondaga County collects sales tax and historically has passed the majority of those sales tax dollars collected back to towns and villages. Some of the towns have used that money that they get. They pass it through to their county property taxpayers, and it results in a lower county property tax. Some of the towns take the money in cash and use it for their own operations, so the people who live in those towns don't get that credit, and they're going to pay the full value assessment, which, as I said, is $5.77 under this budget. All of the villages used the sales tax money that they received in cash, and so the rates in the villages were different. So it created a little bit of a complicated system, and I hope is an explanation for why you can see a headline that says your county tax rates are going down, and then you can get your Eagle bulletin that says your county taxes are going up. It's because of there's two different things going on. We have the county budget, and we have the second year of our sales tax sharing formula changing. More of those sales tax dollars are being kept at the county level to reduce county taxes, and so you're feeling the effects of that. And I just want to remind you, our goals in changing the sales tax sharing formula were pretty simple. One was to recognize the value of the city of Syracuse to the region. The city will be getting, at the end of this change, 25% of the sales tax collected, and the county will be retaining most of the bulk of it. The reason for that, and I'm sure I'm preaching in some case to the choir, but I see David Smith here. David was very helpful in helping that pass because he's a perfect illustration of someone who works for an organization that's providing thousands of great jobs to our region, but because it's a nonprofit state entity, it's not having to pay property taxes. And there's a lot, I think the top five employers reside in the city of Syracuse, so they're not paying property taxes, but they're providing these great jobs, and it's really the economic engine for the region. So we wanted to make sure that the city had the resources it needed to continue to be able to support those businesses. We also wanted to make it more transparent, and I think the need for transparency was just illustrated in my convoluted explanation about why you're county tax rates can go down and your county taxes can go up. By pulling this money back and having municipalities charge for the services they provide, people who are much too busy in their lives to immerse themselves in the details will have a clear understanding. Many, many times I talk to people who would say things like, you know, I live in the village, I get all these great village services, my taxes are low, I think it's worth it, it's a great bargain, I go on with my day. But what they weren't realizing was that the village was collecting sales tax from the county and then using it to pay for its bills, to pay for the village government or the DPW in some cases, village police in some cases. They would use that sales tax money and then just take the net and divide it among village residents, so you were left with the impression that you could have all these wonderful services in your village and they only cost this much. So we're interjecting transparency, and it's just to give people accurate information in a simple way so that you can make the decisions that I hope we will make more of, because the third goal that we had was to encourage a more metropolitan form of government where we share services and try to reduce the overall cost. I've said many times that $5.77 rate in the, you know, the $577 that we collect on a $100,000 house is a minuscule part, really, of your overall taxes. And my focus has been on all of the taxes that you have to pay. You're paying school taxes, town, village, city, county, library, fire district, and our goal is to put policies in place that encourage municipalities to work with each other and try to get your overall bills down. We're not so much concerned that one bill go down if another one goes up. We have to take what is, in 2011, I think $866 million. It's in the ballpark, so I know people like Mitch Lewis are good with the numbers. Don't hold me specifically to that, but it's very close. $866 million that local property taxpayers in Onondaga County are paying on an annual basis. It's outrageously high. Our levy is $154 million, so you'll see there's a lot left for other taxes that you have to pay, and we're trying to keep our eyes on that. Year one was the biggest adjustment. Year two is the second biggest, and then after this, you should start to see that when you read your county tax rates down, that your county taxes are going down. The adjustments are going to stop. I want to tell you one other reminder. We collect property taxes based on the assessed value of your house. We share sales taxes based on population. So if you were living in a town like, for instance, Skaney Atlas, where there are some very highly assessed properties, but sparsely populated, they get very little sales tax back. And then conversely, a town like Salina, where the assessments are more moderate, but the population is higher, they're paying less property tax in, collecting a lot more sales tax. And the overall effect was, for your county taxes in Skaney Atlas, you were paying more than for a $100,000 house. And in Salina, you were paying $200. And it was for the same library system. It was for the same roads. It's not fair to have some people subsidizing others, and so by taking the sales tax money back and using it to lower everybody's county property taxes, you are now left with the bills for your municipality, and I am very happy to leave the decision to the folks who live in those municipalities. We're not trying to drive consolidation with a heavy hand from the county level. We're trying to give people information that will lead to those decisions happening organically, and it's happening at rocket speed. We are constantly talking about different opportunities to consolidate. There's a vote on the ballot on Election Day for the village of Camillus to dissolve its government, and that's the first village, but the city and county economic development offices are together. Our purchasing operation is now together. We're working with the towns on snow plowing contracts. We're working together in a way that we haven't seen before, and I firmly believe that it's because the resources have come back and people are making the decisions that they want their government leaders to work together and get their bills under control. So we're still hitting the bumpy part of the road, but you will start to see that smooth out next year. And I'm just thankful that I don't have an opponent. That is all. That's all separate from the budget, though. That was just my primer on the sales tax. That's all separate from the budget. The budget that I put together is holding the levy flat, and the rate, as I said, will come down a little. But we have significantly higher costs, and I'll tell you what some of the big drivers are. Pensions, and I know you've heard a lot about pension costs, and you might wonder what happened and why is it such a loud conversation with these crazy, for lack of a more intellectual word, these crazy pension costs. First of all, government pensions are very generous. That has been the case historically, and they are expensive. Secondly, when the stock market was thriving in the 90s, the state comptroller changed the requirement for what localities have to contribute. So the stock market was bringing a great return on the pension fund, and they lowered what we as municipalities have to contribute. When that changed, it changed dramatically the requirement for money from municipalities. I'll give you a perspective. When I came here in 2008, the county's contribution for pensions with your local county tax dollars was $15.4 million. This year, it's $32.4 million, and we have another 21% increase in my 2012 budget. It's going up another $7 million. And those are dollars that I have to collect from local property taxpayers. It's increasing at a rate that we cannot keep up with. And I think you're going to start to see some municipalities that are struggling even more than Onondaga County. I don't know if it's going to be control boards or, if you're going to start seeing bankruptcies from municipalities, but we're at that point where people just can't keep up anymore. Our mandates. Nick Pirro was talking about the mandates long before I got here. I wish I had paid better attention. The mandates are killing us. Our year-over-year increase in our state mandated costs is $9.7 million this year. That's just the increase. The increase in our state mandated costs in our 2012 budget is $9.7 million higher than this year's budget. To put that number in perspective for you, our entire county parks budget is $9.1 million. So just the increase in the mandates this year exceeds the entire cost of our county park system, which includes Alliance Bank, Onondaga Lake Park, Highland Forest, Oneida Shores, the zoo, Jamesville Beach. The sum total of our entire park system isn't what the one-year increase in our state-mandated costs are. So I think you can see that we're not going to be able to continue to cut our way out of it. We have made significant cuts. I think I've told you this in the past, and the rate has slowed down a little. I see Elaine. Elaine had to endure the worst of it. But our county personnel, we're down more than 500 employees since I took the job as county executive. And some of that was through a system of painful layoffs. We went through the state's early retirement system. We're not replacing people who are retiring, and we're down over 500 employees. Then there are departments that I have control over. They are not subject to state mandates. things like the Parks Department or our Facilities Department, our transportation where we plow the roads and maintain the roads and bridges, those are not subject to the state mandates. And those departments are down 15 to 17% in terms of both personnel and our costs. So we really are cutting, but we can't possibly keep up with the rate of increases in the bills that we get from the state. The biggest one of those mandates is Medicaid. The bill for Onondaga County, and again, this is just your local share. Medicaid is a federal program, and the federal government shares the responsibility with states. New York State is one of only very few that then passes its share onto counties. So your county property taxes are paying for Medicaid. That doesn't happen across the country, and it's the single biggest reason you can tell people when they say, I live in North Carolina, I live in Florida, my property taxes are tiny on a very expensive house, why in New York is it crazy? The single biggest reason I can tell you is because you are paying for Medicaid with your county property taxes. That's not happening in other parts of the country. And now that I tell you that, let me tell you that your local share in 2012 is $106 million. So I told you that tax levy is 154. Of that 154 that we collect in the entire county, 106 this year goes for Medicaid alone. And that's only one of the state mandates. We have mandated programs for early intervention and preschool, and I see my county department heads nodding their heads. There are departments that I have very little control over because the programs are mandated and the service levels are mandated at the state level. I believe that it's a bad policy, just generally speaking, for people to be, any level of government, to be able to put a program in place that it doesn't have to fund. And that's what we do in New York. The programs are put in place at the state level, and the funding, in large part, comes from the local level. And we have very smart people. I am impressed every day when I go to work. There are people, dedicated professionals who work in county government that really could do a much better job if you would just untie their hands from some of these state mandates. We could do things better. We could provide service on the local level the way the people here need the services. We're different than other parts of the state, but our department heads' hands, in large part, are tied. I want to tell you something that I think I told you before, but I tell you that I think it's a bad policy that you put government programs in place at one level and then you're not required to pay the bills at that state level. Here's an illustration of what happens when you do that. New York State's Medicaid, again, a federal program. There are requirements at the federal level. New York State has added on, I believe, every single option that you can add on, and as a result, the cost for Medicaid in New York State is the highest of anywhere in the United States of America, and it is more than the second and third highest combined. The per capita cost for Medicaid in New York exceeds the cost in the per capita cost in California and Texas combined. So we are outrageously expensive. And then if you overlay that with our very generous enrollment requirements, one in four people who lives in New York is on Medicaid. So it is, I think, becoming self-evident that it's a bad policy, but I'm going to continue to bang the drum. I told you mandates are up $9.7 million in this budget. They're up to $27 million from 2008. And so you might wonder, how is it that our costs can be going the way they are and our levy is staying flat? In large part, that's due to this sales tax sharing formula, and we were very fortunate that some of these things happened at the right time because there are a lot of counties, most counties, that didn't share sales tax and so didn't have the options that we have had in the last couple years. Now, there's a tax cap courtesy of the New York State Legislature. And I hear two things from them. One is, and I don't know if any of the members of the legislature are here, I'm willing to cede some of my time to hear from you. There's two things that I hear. The state closed a $10 billion gap with no new taxes, and it gets a resounding applause whenever I'm in a room where that announcement is made. And it's very difficult for me, and I'm sure for others that are subject to the mandates. It's on us. You know, the costs have been shifted to us, and it's very easy to say, you know, I'm just going to pay less, you pay more. Look, I solved my problem. But when you get down to the bottom, unfortunately, it's us as homeowners in the county. That's the bottom, and that's where the bills are being paid. The other thing is I have heard many times, and I've become good friends with our lieutenant governor, and I think he's going to start avoiding me. But, you know, he was on the radio on a New York City radio program, and I got a copy of it, and he said, you know, I'm hearing a lot of complaints from county executives. They're just going to have to tighten their belts. And it's the real disappointing thing for me is I'm not sure that there's a direct connection, and I would like to make sure that all of you becoming educated on this can have those conversations. But do the state legislature members know that they are responsible for your county property taxes? The state will tell you they don't collect property taxes. Well, let me just give you one more fact and figure. Our levy is 154. Our total bill in 2011 was 160 million, and it's going to be closer to 170 million. With a $154 million levy, we're sending 170 million to pay state bills. So your property taxes are entirely paying for state programs right now. The rest of county government is being funded with sales tax, generally speaking. And, you know, we do get federal and state aid. So I will give you a couple of things that you hear about in the news. The fund balance. We do have a healthy fund balance in Onondaga County, and that is the result of many years of fiscal conservative leadership from John Mulroy, Nick Pirro, and the administration that I have now. We are all adhering to a very conservative, fiscally responsible budget. We live within our means, and we have been able over all of that time to put a little bit of money away in a rainy day fund. We are using that, and the county legislature has a policy goal of 10%, meaning that of the revenue that we take in, we have to have a reserve of 10% of that amount available to us in case of emergencies or, you know, things like a budget deficit. This year, we're going to use $4.5 million of that fund balance, which is $79 million, projected to be $79 million at the end of the year. We're going to use about $4.5 million in my 2012 budget. And then I'm doing something different this year. And I see Linda Irvin is here. I'm playing a little defense from the legislature this year. What I have done that's different than what's happened in the past is last year when I put the budget in front of the legislature, there were things in there for ongoing maintenance, replacing cars for the sheriff, and things that you have to do occasionally on an ongoing basis. Some of that money was cut from the budget. I don't have the ability to veto cuts. If the legislature wants to make cuts, then I have to live with the cuts. They took a lot of money that was in there for things like maintenance, and they used it to cut the property tax levy. And so now, this year, I still need the maintenance, but I didn't collect the tax for it. And now with the property tax cap, we can't even get back to the legislature cut $30 million off the levy last year. And now I'm trying to be very careful that we don't go too far because, as I said, we have been a very Onondaga County is known statewide, and it's due to John Mulroy and Nick Pirro before me. We have a reputation for being very solid financially, and we just have to be careful that we don't do things in, you know, difficult moments like the recession that we've gone through. We have to keep our eyes down the road a little bit further. We can't just govern for November. We have to be very, very careful. And so this year, I put the operating budget together and put it in front of the legislature. And separate from that, I've given them a list of things that I would like to use the fund balance to do, like buy sheriff's cars and replace the windows in the Civic Center and those kinds of things. It's still going to be the legislature's decision whether we do those things, but if they cut them again, they'll fall back into our rainy day account. They won't fall off the levy. And no one would like to reduce the levy more than me, but we also have to continue to operate county government. So you'll hear during this budget process that's very different. The arts and cultural organizations, last year they were in my budget. They did not survive. And for the most part, the arts and cultural, wait, I just want to go back because I already called Linda out, but I want to tell you, and I think I hope I told you last year. What's that? I call you out the right way. Okay. Linda really, I told you they cut the levy last year by $30 million. Linda almost single-handedly kept the bus from going over the cliff because she came in my office and I sat down and I had a very good conversation explaining what 2012, 13, 14 are going to look like. There's a property tax cap looming. Linda went to work and she got enough votes to prevent that from going down $50 million. If that had gone down $50 million last year, we'd be having a very different conversation today. We're able to hold the line, and I do appreciate Linda's involvement. The arts and cultural organizations, for the most part, were cut out of the county budget last year, and they are back in. They are back in my budget this year. As I told the arts organizations that I would do. They're funded, and I'm doing something to try to meet the legislature part way. This year, I have tied the funding for the arts and cultural organizations to about 22% of the room occupancy tax that we take in. When tourists come to town and buy hotel rooms, the tax, that's the room occupancy tax, the tax that's generated, we're earmarking 22% of that for the arts. We've never tried to earmark it to a specific source. This will give the arts organizations, I believe, the ability to plan in the future, and it also rewards them for doing the things that will generate those room nights. It's a real incentive for our arts and cultural organizations to continue to be the economic engine that we know that they are, because the more that fund goes up, if we tie their funding to a percentage of that, it brings them all together on the same team to make those kinds of things happen. The other thing that's different in my effort to meet the legislature is the largest of those organizations I have put into, and this is in conjunction, the arts organizations have been in and we've done this plan together. I certainly don't want to take all of the credit for it, but the larger organizations are going to have to raise private dollars to match the public funding, and they're going to have to do that before the public funding is released. So there is a private, public-private partnership that is part of our arts funding this year that hasn't been there before. And then there are second and third tiers of arts organizations that aren't held to that same standard. But the overall contribution from county government in my budget is about $1.2 million for the arts organizations. And I'm hoping that those efforts that we made to meet the legislature will help those arts organizations to be able to survive the budget cuts this year, because last year the slack was picked up by that Cultural Resources Trust that we created in 2008. That is not supposed to be for the ongoing operations of the arts organizations. They picked up the slack in 1 year, but they cannot possibly pay the bills that the county has for the arts organizations in the past. So I'm hopeful that the arts and cultural organizations will survive. I told you about the purchasing consolidation. The city and county now have come together, and the city school district, and we are using one purchasing department. This is something that back when I was on the city council, and I think long before I got there, people were trying to have happen. And again, you know, the one bright spot of some of these policy changes is money not being as available, and combine it with the recession that we're in. Some of the things that should have happened a long time ago are finally happening. And that is saving the county money, it's saving the city money and the city school district money. But that huge purchasing power, we are now, in my budget, going to try to make available to all the towns and villages. There are a couple new positions that will need to be created in our purchasing department, but that will allow us to do the purchasing for all the towns and villages. That's where the real savings will be, because the towns and villages are buying one and two of things that we're buying large quantities of. And if they can get that rate that we get from being a bulk purchaser, you'll see real savings at the town and village level. And as Elizabeth said, we do have a plan for the central library. And then I will leave it to you for questions, I promise. I'm very excited about this. When the central library was opened, I think 23 years ago, I don't know, is it 23 years ago? It was opened in the galleries when the galleries were envisioned to have a lot more foot traffic than they have. I think you probably remember that it was going to be retail space, and the library is a condominium. We own, the county, you own the library, and the galleries are owned by somebody else. And that's why years ago, do you remember the fight over who's going to fix the roof, because there's one roof on both of them. But a lot of the county's contribution is driven by the square footage of retail space. The way the agreements were written originally was when the galleries gets to a certain level of retail space, meaning more people will be here for the library, then the library will start kicking in. But because that plan was changed, the retail space never came about. The county wasn't contributing to the public area maintenance, the common area maintenance for the building. And I know there were hard feelings, but the deal was the deal. And when the roof started to leak and the fifth floor was being rained on, we decided to do something about that and then go back to our agreement with the gallery's owner. And it's resulting now in something that I think is going to be better for all of us. Because the traffic isn't in the galleries, we want a first floor entrance to the central library. So we're going to take the third and fourth floors, the bulk of the third and fourth floors, and move them to about half that space on the first floor. And so there will be an entrance onto Salina Street, and we're hoping it'll make the library accessible, more accessible to people. The added benefit is with less space on fewer floors, the staffing needs will be reduced. So as people leave, we won't have to replace them. Right now, because there's so much space, we can't really do anything about the levels of staffing. But if we can reduce the footprint and the area that has to be covered by the librarians, then the ongoing costs will go down. This is in my budget, and this is one of the more controversial topics in the budget. And so if you have any influence, I implore you to help us, because I think what's being missed, $7.5 million cost to us, but the ongoing cost of operating the library will be reduced, the access to the public will be greatly enhanced, and the third and fourth floors will be available for the county to either sell or lease. We don't have a plan for what we would do, but as I said, it's a condominium. There is the opportunity to generate revenue there, and when people see the bill, they're saying, it's too expensive, we can't do it, but it's, like a lot of these issues, there's more to it, it's complicated, it's nuanced, and if you put pencil to paper and look at the dollars, it makes sense, and then if you add to that what this will be in terms of an improved central library, it's, I believe, a very easy decision to make. So if you have the ability to influence any of the people that will be voting on the budget, Linda, I'm guessing we have Linda. If there's one thing that Linda talks about consistently when I see her, it's support for the library system. So I'm guessing that we have Linda. But I will end my prepared remarks there. I have given this, am I running out of time?
We're right on time.
Okay, all right. I have given this overview of the budget a couple times now. I gave it to the legislature, I've given it to the newspaper, and sometimes when you give the same presentation, I may have missed, there might be gaps. So if there's any questions, I try to explain it as succinctly as I can, but I don't ever say anything succinctly. And I'll tell you, my mother thinks that this is like just punishment for me, because she says I didn't stop talking when I was a little kid, and I am so talked out at this point. So she's so happy that you all now have to listen to me, and she can go on with her day. Okay. Do you have, you want to start questions?
And for those of you who are guests, if you don't know, just raise your hand and I will try and spot the questions. I wanted to mention that this morning I caught a little story on the morning local news about the budget, and it was particularly about Geddes, the village of Salve, and the Salve Fire Department. And from what I saw, they have a really nice firehouse in Salve. But the reporter, as he was wrapping it up, said something about preliminary conversations being started about, he used the phrase, Metro Fire District. And he was not struck by lightning or anything. I was, whoa, okay.
So. Well, you're finding another question. I'll tell you very quickly. The county, by law, cannot have a fire department. I don't know why that is, but we cannot, like the city has its own municipal fire department. We can't have a countywide fire department. We can, however, contract for fire services, and now there are issues in some of the firehouses. The world has changed, and being able to rely on volunteers has become difficult. People are working two and three jobs, and some of the firehouses don't have what they need. What we did was put the response times out for all of the volunteer fire departments, and then again, hoping that those conversations will happen organically, and we're seeing fire departments come together now. It is very, very expensive. The cost for the volunteer departments outside the city exceeds the cost for the city's department, and when you consider that the city are paid and we're staffing a lot of the suburbs with volunteers, you can see that there's opportunity for savings out there.
Most of the Medicaid expense is for long-term care, care of our senior citizens, which essentially is a middle-class benefit, one way or another, over the long term. But my question is, if the state was to assume responsibility for the total expenses of Medicaid, how would you suggest that they increase the revenues to meet that obligation that we really have to take care of older people in their vulnerable years?
That's a great question, and I think I missed in my remarks that there is a bill now, or a piece of legislation, what do they call it, at the state level? It's a resolution at the county level. There is a Senate bill right now, and it has bipartisan support. I think there's a sponsor, a Democratic sponsor in the Assembly. Sam Roberts is here. He can probably tell me, and a Republican in the Senate, to start in 2012 with a hard cap on the Medicaid growth for counties and then a gradual takeover by the state. I don't know about how quickly the state's going to be able to do that because of its own finances. So you asked a very good question, and the bulk of our cost for Medicaid is for long-term care. And what will it do for us to just shift that to the state? Where will the revenue come from? There, because we've added on so much to our Medicaid programs, I think there's opportunities to make our Medicaid less expensive, but we also have loopholes that I think need to be closed, and I'll give you one. It's called spousal refusal. You maybe, if you ever watch your television, see advertisements for financial institutions or lawyers, and I am one, that will tell you to come avail yourself of their services, and they will help you shield your assets from Medicaid. You are able to, in New York State, refuse to pay for a spouse that has to go into a nursing home or has to use Medicaid, I should say. That in and of itself, if that loophole were to close, I think you'd see a lot more revenue. There are people who have means available to pay for some of their share for the cost of Medicaid. And if you just close that one opportunity that people have to refuse to do that for a spouse and end-of-life care, I think you'll start seeing the revenue coming in. But, you know, when you watch those commercials, and I never really thought about them until I had this job, but you watch those commercials and they tell you how to shield your assets from Medicaid, you can put your loved one in a wonderful facility, it'll be on Medicaid, and you can shield your assets and still continue to live your life. That's on the rest of us. And I don't think people make that connection, because I think people who would never do that do it in that case because they don't make that connection. I'm shielding my assets from Medicaid, but really they're just putting that cost on the rest of us. So if we could close that one, I think that'd be a good start.
You mentioned that the levy would remain the same because there was a 1% increase in the assessed values. And that seems to imply that perhaps this Onondaga County area is one of the best real estate markets in the United States. And I wondered how you come to that conclusion.
The levy is remaining the same. The total amount of property taxes that we're collecting is remaining the same. Separate from that, different sentence, assessed values in the county are up almost 1%. And we're not taxing that growth. As a result, your rate is coming down. The rate per thousand is $5.77. Last year it was like $5.82 or something. So your rate is coming down, but the levy is remaining flat. And so we're just not taxing that growth. And I think our real estate market is good, but probably not the best in the United States. So if I've left you with that impression, I'm not doing a good job. Everybody, no, we're not down though. It's our assessment. What might be a better indicator would be what homes are selling for. But
hi, Joni. First, I want to compliment you on your vision for the library. I think it's brilliant. And second, regarding the fire departments, other states do have countywide fire departments. Have you had any discussions with the lieutenant governor or the governor about changing the law? We have a highly qualified city fire department that would be ideally suited to set up a metro department or a countywide department. Has there been any conversations about this? Is it a possibility to change the law?
I'm not sure it's necessary to change the law. I've had that conversation, but not with either of those two gentlemen. I've had it with the State Department of State, and they have talked about the way other communities have done it in New York State. That's a New York State law, though, that we can't have a municipal countywide fire department. But it might not be necessary because we could, and I'm trying to put the policies in place so that people make the right decisions. I'm not trying to drive the decisions, but it's possible for the county someday to contract with someone like the Syracuse City Fire Department, and it wouldn't be a municipal fire department. It would be a contract with an outside. But we're not there yet. We are seeing a lot of steps forward with people coming together, different fire departments coming together. And when you have some of the stories that the newspaper has highlighted about, you know, the time it's taking now in some cases, overall, our volunteer fire departments are doing a great job. There's just fewer people doing it. And we owe a huge debt of gratitude to the people that do get up in the middle of the night and respond voluntarily to their neighbor's crisis, but there's just not enough of us doing it anymore, I think, is what one of the problems is.
I want to compliment you on this presentation. Just an absolutely very clear discussion of the strategic issues. Just excellent. But I have one question. The state mandates total, if I remember correctly, $170 million. Our levy is $154 million. But then we receive a lot in state aid in other forms. Do you know, is there any balance? Do you know what that amount is that we...
The amount that we get from state aid is going down. So it's not keeping up. And that's what I meant when I said that they closed a $10 billion gap with no new taxes. They did things literally, Minch, like say we split a program 50-50. They cut their share to 48, and we have to pay the other 52. They didn't relieve us of the mandate. We're just paying more. So the state aid is going down at the same time. The budget, which I don't think I ever said, is about $1.12 billion. So the $154 million levy is a small fraction of what the overall county budget is.
Joni, I just want to applaud your leadership and vision. It's fantastic. In fact, working with Mayor Minor and pulling that all together is awesome. But the question is, do you think, and from what you hear from your team, that the general public understands the situation and is supportive of these drastic changes that are needed for local government? Or do you think that's a long road ahead and there's not going to be the substantive changes that we really need until further out there?
I think some of the change is happening because of this crisis that we're in, and we should take advantage of that. But there has been, I'm sure you have all seen the same thing, this black and white conversation about government and no government. And it's more complicated than that. There is a role for government, and it's to put smart policies in place. You know, when you look at corporations and people want to vilify corporations, in some cases rightfully so, but they exist to make money. A corporation and the board has a fiduciary duty to maximize the profits, and they're there to make money, and they're going to make money. That's why they exist. It's the government's role to put policies in place that levels that playing field and that those monies are made in a way that doesn't harm the rest of us that are here. So it's not no government or, you know, a socialized government. There's all of these policies, I think, are multifaceted, and I've really enjoyed it. I know Gwen Mannion is here. She's running for the county legislature. I love having conversations with people that see the nuance. They see that there's more than one way of looking at an issue. There's an opportunity to put smart policies in place. We can continue to be fiscally conservative, but still at the same time recognize the value of the arts to the community and things like that. People here get it, and I think I'm encouraged when people stop to listen that for the most part, even people who live in the furthest reaches of the suburbs understand why we're supporting the city. But again, people are just too busy in their lives to stop and really avail themselves of the information and come to some of what I think are smarter decisions in the end. But you are going to see some move in the right direction. I am proud of what I've done. I am running for re-election, and I'm happy, very happy that I'm not opposed. My husband actually forgot that I was running. I thought it was funny. I started talking about what do you want to do on election night, and he was like, why? You know, I said, I'm on the ballot. And I really am proud. We've done a lot. But in many cases, I have, and the team and county government, I can't take the credit, has done what they've done with their hands tied behind their backs, because we're met with that, you know, cut at any cost. Like, don't do anything, and don't hire anyone, and don't, you know, and it's been very frustrating. So I'm hopeful the entire legislature's on the ballot in the fall. I'm hopeful that people will take a good hard look. It's so much more important to you who your county legislator is than it is who your Congress member is or United States Senator. I mean, those are big issues that drive this country in a direction, but these are the folks that are affecting your quality of life. And when you have an opportunity to put somebody there who can make things better, I hope you will do it.
Just as an aside, I read recently that in Nevada, at least, they have none of the above option on the ballot. So I wonder what would happen. No, okay.
That would be so embarrassing.
Joni, can you tell us what share of Medicaid is assumed by the federal government, the state, and county or local?
I can ballpark it for you. I think the overall cost this year was about $650 million, and I think the state is paying the federal government pays roughly half, so 3.25, and then except that it's changed a little because of the cap. The cap that the state put in place under Nick Pirro's leadership in 2005 has now resulted in that changing a little because it's growing more than the cap. So of the 325 that's left, we're at 154. So 108, or I mean, that would be 308, so they're picking up a little bit. They're picking up a little bit more than 25%. We're paying a little bit less than 25%, and the federal government pays half.
You mentioned an earmark out of the room tax for arts and culture, which I'm sure we all think is a great idea. Question is, where is that money coming from? Does that mean that, for instance, the Convention and Visitors Bureau is getting less money? Where was the money going before?
It's not that direct, and I probably would have to come back to you. The Convention and Visitors Bureau is going to get a little bit less money, but there's changes there. Some of the staff is going to start reporting to the On Center. So there's, but The room occupancy tax in the past has been used for things like paving the roads, and that we're trying to move away from.
We have one more question, and it's way over on the other side of the room, so it'll be a quick question, and then we will wrap it up. Thank you.
Good morning. About a week ago, Senator Gillibrand was here, and you participated in the discussion about economic opportunity for women in the community. And as you were leaving the room, you mentioned how the county is engaging minority-owned and women-owned businesses. Could you talk a little bit about the secondary benefit that that has in our community?
Yes. One of the goals that I have is that we stop talking about meeting the goals of minority and women-owned businesses. I would like to be so far exceeding the participation that we don't even really have to talk about it anymore. One of the things that I put in place that I mentioned to Senator Gillibrand on the way out is we have requests for proposals and we have bids where we have to take the lowest bid. And then we also have, if the dollar amount is low enough, it doesn't meet the threshold, then we just have to call three vendors for quotes. And the policy that I've put in place in our purchasing department is if one of those three that you're calling for a quote is not a minority or woman-owned business, then just come tell me why. And the response that I got was, we do 10,000 of these a year. It'll bring things to a screeching halt. We can't possibly involve you in all of these decisions. And I said, well, I know one way to keep me out of the decisions, and that is to call a minority or woman-owned business every time you're calling for a bid, or I mean a quote. So they haven't come to me one single time. but the benefit, this seems so obvious, to use the word that Dean Rubin highlighted for us all in the paper the other day, that until everybody has the opportunity to thrive, we're not reaching our potential. And the county government was no different than a lot of other entities where there were barriers in place that you didn't even really see. And it was keeping a lot of people outside in terms of their ability to gain employment with the county or to do business with the county. And I had a round table of minority and women business owners. And I said, I know what I want to do, but you're on the receiving end. What can we be doing? And they really gave me some of the ideas. They said, when you went out for a bid for library roofs, you put a package out for 8 roofs. That is limiting who can respond to just a very few big contractors. And they said, if you put the request out for a roof or 2 roofs or 4 roofs, you would have had more participation. The big benefit in terms of dollars saved to taxpayers is enormous because we increase competition by doing that. We're not limiting ourselves to just a couple of the big guys. You know, we have a more competitive playing field, so it's fewer of your dollars I have to spend to put the roof on.
Excellent. Thank you, County Executive.
Thank you. Thanks.